Welcome to another episode in our Destination Rural podcast series. I'm Peter Rutherford. I'm the CEO of the Rural Doctors Association of Australia. And for this episode, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Natasha Coventry, the Director of Medical Services and Rural Generalist Extraordinaire from Cooktown in far north Queensland. So, Tash, thank you for joining us on our podcast series for Destination Rural. We'll kick off with just if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and, you know, what led to your interest in rural medicine?
Oh, okay, great question. Well, I'm a Southeast Queensland girl, was born in sort of Gaynda, and so lived in certainly inland Queensland. Come from a long line of rural families, so my dad's family were from farming land around Owra and Nobby in the Darling Downs, and so I guess always had an affinity to rural. Rural medicine, I kind of fell into it, I guess, a little bit. I was inspired by, I went to a church that supported missionary doctors who did that full range of incredible obstetric care in developing countries. And so I guess that kind of piqued my interest in a rural career as a child. I then did a science degree in managed to get some work experience with David Rimmer, who is just a legend in rural circles as well. And he really challenged me, I guess, to see where my science degree could either lead in a career in medicine. And I, again, was just really inspired by him and the work that he was doing. And so ended up applying for postgraduate medicine and got into it. And throughout my medical, did more sort of work experience with him. And at the end of my training, went up to Kaunyama for a month and worked with both Lara Wieland and David Rimmer in that setting. And I guess throughout my uni, I also got a John Flynn scholarship to Cooktown. And so between the two, just was so I inspired by the role that rural doctors could play in our own country. And although it's not a developing country, the health needs in rural and remote Queensland and Indigenous health specifically are so huge. And there's such an opportunity to just improve health outcomes. And so it was really sort of set on going back to Cooktown ultimately to continue my career. So went to Cairns as an intern and then kind of defaulted into my own rural generalist pathway.
So what is it about Cooktown that brought you back there?
Oh, good question. Well, there's a few things. I have to say, I came up here and it is just God's own country. It is just beautiful. You stand up on Grassy Hill and you look over to the traditional owned land of North Shore, and it's compared to where I had grown up, where every hill had been cleared for grazing, this was virgin rainforest essentially. And you kind of got this sense of there's parts of what I'm looking at that probably no man has ever walked on. Like, it was just this sense of sort of frontier like excitement. And the people up here are just so inspiring. You know, everyone has a backstory that is filled with challenges. And I guess they really value the care that you provide them. So I came up as a medical student, and I came up at the end of my first year of medicine. The doctor at the time, Shirley Butler, was very, very wise in sort of saying, you'll spend the rest of your career in a hospital, in a hospital setting. If you're going to fall in love with bush medicine, you're going to have to fall in love with the bush. So get out and see what the lifestyle has to offer here. If you get to go fishing with any of the locals, go fishing with the locals. And I took her at a word and I went out fishing with a man that has now ended up becoming my husband. So I met him in my first week of my John Flynn scholarship placement up here. We still have this ongoing sort of disagreement as to whether, you know, I fell in love with Cooktown first or with him. It was actually Cooktown. I was wondering how I'd convince someone to come here and live with me long term. And in the end, I sort of just circumvented that by marrying a local, which was very convenient. And it's been a very wonderful and unexpected outcome of the John Flynn scholarship.
You mentioned before David Rimmer.
Yes.
And his role and influence. So thinking about, you know, other junior doctors or medical students, how important is, you know, having some good mentors and role models?
Essential. It's not just to inspire you or to be able to speak, I guess, words of possibility into you of going, I could do this and this would be a really good thing. But those mentors stay with you lifelong. And so I still lean on those people that were really key in my formative years of going, am I a good fit for rural medicine? And so apart from kind of giving you a vision for the future, they become part of your sustaining and support network as you continue your career in rural medicine. So that network, and that's played out certainly, and I, heard some of the other podcasts, but RDAQ is tremendous for that as well. You know, leaning on those who are like-minded and, so much is assumed backstory. Again, you don't need to explain the challenges. Everyone is implicitly aware of it and the impact on family and all of the challenges you have. So the starting point for those conversations and relationships is far more, accelerated and able to provide that support. So, yeah, absolutely essential. And it's really lovely to think now that you're in a position to be able to pass that on to the next generation as well. So it has this sort of vertical line of, the gift that keeps on giving. Well, you kind of hope so, at least.
No, I'm sure it does, Tash. I've never, everyone that I meet that knows you as well, always speaks so highly of you and what you do up in Cooktown. You did mention your husband before. So do you want to talk to me a little bit about your family sort of situation and, I know you've got some kids and, are they school age? You know, have there been tough decisions in relation to their education, things like that? So just a little bit about your family situation.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So we've got four children and they came fairly in quick succession. I had four kids under six. I think the longest I took off on maternity leave was 6 months and have gone back to it very quickly. But, I think this is one of the advantages as a woman in a remote location. The possibilities of being able to juggle motherhood and work are so much better than if you're in a city job. So, I was still breastfeeding to well beyond 12 months. And, in fact, I gave up pumping. It was just quicker for Justin to bring Bubby into work because, park 2 minutes outside the hospital, it's a very free parking. Yay. So it kind of just all works. Or similarly, again, under, breastfeeding policy in Queensland Health, I could duck home because it was quicker to do that than it would be to find a quiet place for a breast pump. So it was wonderful. So it was really nice to be able to do that. And at times I'd have a bassinet under my desk with the baby in it, and again, that's acceptable in rural and remote hospitals. I take my children to a pediatric clinic down in our Indigenous communities. And in fact, that enabled more relationship building with the women that were bringing kids in to see me because there was this real sense of kinship and understanding as well. And so, yeah, it's been very, there's certainly been advantages to having a family remotely. Education is a challenge. And I think it's such a personal decision about whether you move for your kids' education, whether you don't, you use boarding school, or whether the education locally is able to meet your family's needs. It's a little bit like, I think any parental decision has the potential to become vehemently defended. I don't think it needs to be. It's a bit like breastfeeding and bottle feeding. At the end, the kids still turn out okay. So you just have to do what's right for your family. And I think the same with education. So for us, we've chosen to send our kids to boarding school, and that's been, terrible, but at the same time, great. And I've got two kids now in Brisbane at a boarding school that I went to as well. So that's kind of helped. It's familiar and it's co-ed. And so, and they're having a great time, but yes, it everything's got its pros and cons. I certainly look forward to holidays, but I get to indulge them completely and spoil them. And so it's kind of nice being able to not have to be the bad cop. I just get to be the perpetual good cop in my children's upbringing at the moment. So I'm seeing that as a win.
So with lifestyle, is every day, even work-wise, is every day the same? Or, talk to me a little bit about, how you keep your job interesting. you've mentioned about, you know, taking the kids to the pediatric clinic and things like that, but what sort of things, you know, is there other elements to your role other than just the clinical, or and how do you keep it all interesting?
Well, you know, for anyone who is on the spectrum of ADHD, a career in rural medicine is perfectly aligned because there is nothing predictable about work in a remote location. And that's what appeals. And even as a junior doctor, I came up as a PGY2. And I remember in sort of one 24-hour period, I delivered a baby, I lysed someone's MI, and I diagnosed someone's sort of Bell's palsy and reduced a fracture. And you just have, it's sort of lucky dip. You have no idea what's coming through the door. Chances are something will be you've never dealt with before, but the supports around are great. And so apart from YouTube, there's always someone to call. On the other end of the phone, for us, it's Cairns. And those relationships are really important, but you don't feel as isolated as the geography would suggest. You know, there's so much support and people to be able to help you do your job at the coalface. So the job itself just lends itself to variety. On top of that, in Cooktown, we really do work in the full spectrum of rural generalist medicine. So we got re-established as a maternity centre in 2015. The birth that I delivered when I was a PGY2 was off the books. We weren't meant to be birthing back then. Now we are. So we've got 24/7 Caesar capability. You know, we do emergencies. We've got a busy inpatient unit. But in fact, most of us predominantly work in primary healthcare and primary healthcare in surrounding Indigenous communities. And that is just so satisfying. And at the moment, we'll go out and do a GP clinic. And if a person needs to be admitted to hospital, they drive back with us in the hospital car and we admit them to hospital. So you're kind of like that old country GP of looking after them in community and looking after them in hospital, but with the advantages that other people can share the encore, and that you've got this collective brain that you can lean on of other people to be able to think through complex, because some of the clinical presentations are difficult, and so having other people to draw on is really helpful. So it is, it's really interesting medicine. I've got the added element now that I'm in I'm the director of medical services. So in fact, my administrative portfolio continues to creep, as I think most people in med admin would find. I actually, you know, the on-call is the best and the worst part of the job. It's the most intrusive on your personal life, but it's also the times that you actually feel like you're a real doctor, because that after-hours stuff, and certainly for me when my day job is a lot of meetings, it's actually quite nice to be called in to be a real doctor at 2 o'clock in the morning to someone who's really sick and who I genuinely care about because I've known them for 20 years, you know. So it's a job that just, you know, you don't even need to look for the variety. It's there in front of you.
You mentioned like Cooktown being quite remote. How many doctors are actually working in Cooktown?
Oh, all up. We've got a private GP practice. And we've got the hospital. We're building up our junior doctors. So we've got a few over establishment at the moment. Officially, I have 10 positions. We've sort of looking to increase that pretty quickly. We've had extraordinary growth in our ED out of keeping with the rest of Australia. So is Cairns, actually, in the last 2 years. I think everyone's moving to the north to escape COVID. And so we're seeing them come through our ED and our hospital. So at the moment, I've got, 9 SMOs and a few PHO positions.
So not isolated. You might be remote, but you're not isolated as a professional group.
No. And we're really fortunate. But then that I've got some part-timers. And so I've got a cohort of GP obstetricians, GP anaesthetists. I've got some with the ASTs and Indigenous Health. I've got someone, Ebony, with mental health, which has just been such a valuable skill set to bring to remote. I'm just so blessed. My team is amazing. And it's I'd see any of them as a doctor, but between the team, everyone's got their strengths and weaknesses, and it's lovely to actually see the collective improvement to the community services that having that rural generalist model brings. When you start getting into that larger group, it's great. I've still got plans for more.
So it'll be Royal
GP surgeon, GP internal med, exactly.
No. What's some of the best advice you've ever been given in relation to, well, career or personal, but sort of that has prepared you well for being a rural doctor?
Oh, best advice. Gosh, I think getting involved in your community. It's very easy when you go to any site for a job that you just hang out with your colleagues. I think actually making relationships within the community itself just brings so much more to the experience. And even if you're there for a limited period of time, it still just makes it so much more memorable and valuable as well. And it really helps you see your patients as people. I think, again, when the junior doctors come up from Brisbane and they say, I have just valued this term because I've had the chance to actually talk to my patients, and you just realize, that they are, they could be related, they're just people. And in the city, it's so easy just to think that they're a patient and this sort of production line of healthcare delivery. So I think you need to make the most of that opportunity. Also, though, saying that, you've got to put in boundaries. And, and I know I'm not the first to say that in the podcast series, but just to almost have your answer ready for when you get asked for test results in the supermarket, so that you're not setting up a precedence for yourself that then actually makes you avoid the supermarket. You do want to be consistent, be ready for the intrusion and people crossing that boundary of doctor, friend, or that you're just available outside of a work setting, and so that you put things in place that mean you can kind of coexist long term. And I think it took me a long time to really appreciate both of those things. And I'll just give the example that I was almost so afraid of being in the situation of treating a friend with a critical illness that I avoided making friends. It was easier to almost keep that separation. And it was in a situation that I got kind of almost, again, just by how it turned out, a friend came in who was critically unwell, and just how reassuring it was for them to have someone they knew and cared about them treat them. And something I realized, and in fact, the very thing that made it more stressful for me made it better for my patients, that if they knew their doctor and knew they cared about them, their community, were invested, were approachable, in fact, it made their healthcare journey so much more less stressful and less anxiety producing. And so it's like, okay, so I've got to actually kind of shift that and just accept it, it is what it is, but in fact, it's not all bad. And there's a lot of good from being able to, again, be invested and involved. And so with that, you sign your kids up to swimming lessons and you start contributing to volunteer work and stuff. And it's great. I love it,
Tash, that's amazing. That's so beautiful to hear. It's a different sort of perspective, I think, than what we often here. So I think that's, a really insightful. And I think that would be something that, many of the listeners will get actually a lot out of. We're coming to the end. And I'd like to finish on a fairly quick fire round where I throw some things at you just to learn a bit about you, but also a bit about what you think, is important or not. So we'll kick off and just the first thing that pops into your head.
Oh, no. Okay, here we go.
All right. Favourite holiday destination?
New Zealand.
Guilty pleasure?
Ooh, a good bottle of red wine.
Best thing about rural medicine?
The lack of people. The fact you can disappear. The rural side of it is just great.
The worst thing about rural medicine?
The length of time it takes to get to the city. If there's a great show in Brisbane, that's a day's travel to be able to enjoy it,
Cowboys or Broncos?
Oh, that is so hard because I spent 12 years in Brisbane. Still, Cowboys.
Okay. FRAC GP Fakram or A Frakma?
Oh, see, that's so hard too. Man, rural generalism, because you need all three. And I've got all three.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Well, Tash, thank you for spending some time with me and talking all things rural medicine. And I think it's been lovely to learn a little bit more about you and the environment you work in up in Cooktown. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Peter. It's been lovely having a chat.